Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, David.
Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Anything happened on the way to service this morning. While we were coming down, there was a large accident that closed down the entirety of I-5 South. So it made us late in coming. And it just brought to mind how it is that there are things that happen in life that detour us and make us go in different directions than what we thought. And so oftentimes, people get anxious about such things, and times there's on the freeways more and more incidences of road rage, where people have tremendous pent-up tension as a result of things not going exactly the way that they hoped or planned. And the thing is that when you see God's hand in everything, then you take it that whatever is happening is perfect and right for you. As the traffic came to a standstill, and we sat there, came an option to get off and take a detour, so we did so. And as we sat at a light, a certain person was sitting there and not going, and you knew that the light was going to turn. It was a long time before it came back, so some frustration around the individual not taking their turn. But overall, the feeling is that this is God's hand in it all. This is His play. And it is His work. It is His will to work out through this universe. And what a difference it makes when you really feel it. We can think it up in our heads, but when you feel it, when you begin to actually perceive that this world is His play. And our responsibility is to attune ourselves to Him. Now that's quite a discipline and responsibility. But it doesn't extend any further than that, because once we attune ourselves to Him, we carry it out His will as He chooses. Now this is not excuse making for being indifferent or lackadaisical, because once again, our responsibility is to attune ourselves with Him. And there are those who are sometimes fairly chronically late. And when you see there's a pattern in your life, then it is up to you to change it out of respect for God, for the teachings, for the guru, for the teacher. We should arrive on time, a little bit early. And when we find that there's a pattern in our life, as I say, we need to start thinking seriously about what we are doing to make ourselves in a condition where we're not running on time. Think about being in relationship with time. Are you in a friendly relationship with time? Are you in a peaceful relationship with time? Or does it always feel like you're in a struggle? I remember once in my own life when found myself constantly saying, there's just not enough time. There's not enough time to do all the things that I want to do. And after I said it innumerable times, I realized I was programming myself for there to be the exact condition that I was saying, that there was not enough time. So I decided to change my mantra around time. And I started saying to myself and to others, there is plenty of time to do all the important things in life. All the important things in life. Now there may be things that get left undone. Because for somebody who is active in this life, there are always things that get left undone. But when you prioritize and decide on what is important, then you put that first as you decide on what the greatest importance is for you. And so this is the thing that we really look to do, is to align ourselves with God's will, to put ourselves into friendly relationship with time. And when you do, you will have a just cause for having peace in your life. The great Larhe Mahasya used to say, striving, 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 behold, one day the goal. And so we strive, we work, and we strive some more, and we learn from our experience, and as a result, we grow. I wrote something earlier this week that I always feel like these things are coming through me rather than from me. But I quite liked it, so I thought I would read it to you. And it's entitled, Come. And at one time, Master said that he would ply his boat between the shores of the world and eternity until every soul was saved. And then he told Mother one time, he says, My God, what was I thinking of when I said such a thing? But this is in relationship to that statement. My dear Master, when you say with such love, I will come again and yet again to save all souls from pain of separation, I hear a clarion call to all of us to come. Come, my brethren. Come and bring your dear ones nigh. One devotee takes the hand of the next. That one stretches out and takes another by their hand. And so on goes the chain. It is a chain of humanity, a chain of love. Come, my brothers and sisters, come. Come into the universal kingdom of soul, where the light illumines every mind, where love is the only bond. Come to where wisdom sets the bearing, and selfless service is the singular motive. Hear the Master's call, dear ones. Hear his voice echoing through eternity. And come. Come out of your darkness into the warm light of self-realization until there is none left in the dungeon of delusion. And from Papa, True Mission of Human Life. Marvelous are the possibilities of human life. You can elevate it to its highest eminence and make it reveal its rare hidden powers to produce works that can leave a permanent impress upon time. Mainly, there are three factors of human life, namely, thinking, feeling, and acting. If you manipulate these functions from your lower nature, they create only discord for yourself and for those around about you. Whereas, if they are inspired by your higher divine nature, they make for the attainment of a state of harmony conducive to your own felicity and also for the delight of others. Before the divine power takes possession of your life and handles it as it wills, for your immortal freedom and for the universal beneficence, you should, in the first place, deliver it to that supreme power. Just as a well-tuned musical instrument, when played upon by a master musician, brings out a sweet and enthralling melody, so also when God, the master of beauties and harmonies, manifests in the human being, he blesses it with the gift of cosmic vision and surcharges it with an all-embracing love. The main condition for the revealment of God within you is the elimination of your ego sense and the complete surrender or dedication of every part of your being to the omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient God. Instead of the ego, God should hold sway over you. God's light should illumine your mind. God's love should permeate your heart. God's power should control your activities. In short, you should be so fully imbued with God consciousness that your life inside and outside is fully divinized, and the world is seen by you as the blissful expression of your regenerated life. All that is good, great, and magnificent that you observe in the world, which have stood the test of time and have been the wonder and joy of ages, have been the creations of human lives in whom God has manifested himself in all his glory and perfection. God has reserved, as it were, his powers for unveiling the exalted qualities of love, sacrifice, and service only through human life. Hence, human life has a special mission and significance among the innumerable species of creatures living on the earth. Every member of the human race can become such a vehicle for God to possess and to be a son of divine love and splendor. The lower human nature is brought under control so that the divine nature may be released, and thereafter life may think, feel, and act from a new and universalized eternal vision and experience. There is delight in the progress that you are making to this beatific state. There is bliss in the attainment of it, and there is the spontaneous outflow of joy in the life that succeeds it. So, it is rightly said, Sadaka and Siddha are both he, becoming and being are both his. Therefore, let your life be made so fit and pure that its hidden mysteries are brought out for the fulfillment of the divine purpose in the world, which is to awaken mankind to its awareness of its identity with him, the one great Lord and Master of the worlds. Papa so beautifully expresses this universal divine vision. It is true that this is a rare state in the world today to attain to. It is true that there are many forces in this world that are struggling to divert the human self from attaining this divine vision. We have come recently out of these dark ages of the Kali Yuga, and then it was even a more difficult struggle in order to attain that more beatific vision of the universal residing within all and all. And yet there were those rare souls who strove through all the darkness, the morass, the blackness of night that encased the world at the time, and rose up into having that beautiful vision of light, the light everywhere, always, pervading everything. And so we come into an age now where there is still much of that darkness that is hanging on. There are still those old attitudes. There are still those old ego notions that the ego is the center of the universe. The teachings used to be that the earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around it. And this was an expression of the ego sense, because the ego feels like the whole universe revolves around it. Even when we feel bad about ourselves, just think how involuted that mind is that is so self-aware. The pattern I was born into this world with was one of being very shy. And I know from first-hand experience just how self-involved it is when you come into a situation and you feel extremely shy, because everything of your attention is focused on yourself. What do other people think of me? How am I appearing? How do other people perceive me? And it just gets so intense, and it's all about me, me, me. Now you think that, well, perhaps because I don't think highly of myself, then that's not ego. But it is ego. It's ego just as powerfully and just as much as somebody who's very self-involved with themselves, thinking that the world centers around them only in what we might call a positive way. Because they think of themselves as better and higher. I've actually spoken to people at times who have said that they feel that they are better than the people who are around them, and that they have some kind of right of superiority. Now, when I looked at their lives, I didn't see anything remarkable where they would have a right to think of themselves as being quite superior, and yet this is the way they felt about themselves. And when you analyze it deeply enough with the individual, you finally get to the core, and it's not because they really feel that they're superior. They're really compensating for not feeling adequate. We've witnessed recently through the Olympics a young man, Phelps, who has won 8 world records. And when they spoke about his earlier life, he had a lot of difficulties. He had attention deficit disorder. He had hyperactivity. He had difficulty sitting in a schoolroom. He was unusual looking. His arms are very long for his height. He's tall, but his arms are even longer. He has a long torso. And the kids used to really make fun of him. And yet, he took all of that, and his father left him and his family when he was just a boy. So he had a lot of things going against him. But he had a coach who saw something great in him and decided that if he really worked at it, he could become something really great in the world of swimming. And indeed he has. He's achieved a mark that no one else has ever done. And so it's not where we have come from, but it is what we've set our mind upon. Do we set our mind upon something greater than ourselves? You see, when we're feeling very shy and very ego-centered about ourselves, we don't do that. We see ourselves as the center. But the greatest thing we can do is put our mind onto God. Because when we put our mind onto God, we expand ourselves into a new sphere of awareness. We go beyond the little preoccupations of the ego. It is a sad thing that people feel so bad about themselves that they don't want their picture taken. They don't want to involve themselves in activities. They won't go out into the world because they feel that they're just unacceptable in all these different ways. And so this is something that is really hard to fight against. And yet we must go beyond it if we are to go to beyond the ego. We surrender all the things that we don't like about ourselves. We surrender all the things that we feel that hold us back. It's an amazing thing how much we hang on to these so-called negative things, negative self-perceptions, negative images that we have of ourselves. As one time thinking about the idea that people who are called nerds or geeks and they dress differently, how much they don't care about how they dress. And yet if you try to change that person's dress habits, good luck. They're going to fight you every bit of the way. They dress very particularly. They just dress differently than many of the other people do that are around them. And so they become known in this certain circle as being a nerd or, a geek of some kind. They're very particular about it. They're very attached, actually, to how they look, to how they portray themselves into the world. I remember a young woman that I was interviewing one time. And she was a lovely woman, but she dressed in a very peculiar kind of a way, and she had white pancake makeup, and she dyed her hair very dark. When I first saw her, I thought somebody had come for Halloween. But this is the way that she dressed normally. And she said, "Well, I'm not into fashion," and I had to laugh. Because I imagine that she spent a great deal of time. I know what she meant. She wasn't into the kind of fashion that you would see on the front of magazines. But very definitely, she was attached to the way that she portrayed herself. So everybody has a way that they like to costume themselves in this world. And some people do it according to the morals and standards of the day, and others go directly in opposition. But those who are very dedicated to being opposite in this world are very, very much attached to this world. They wouldn't like to admit it. And they would fight me about it if I were to say so. But it's true. To go beyond the ego is not an easy thing. It requires that we get outside of ourselves. Now, the human cannot defeat the human, nor can the human kill the human. The human ego cannot transcend itself. It requires divine grace. It requires a power that is greater than ourselves in order to attain to that higher state. Mother one time said that there is nothing worse than trying to see somebody trying to be humble. I remember there was a case at the ashram of a young woman. I think she's very devoted, but she always made sure that she was last to go to the flower ceremony or any of the other kinds of activities. Now, this is an example of somebody who is egotistically trying to portray what it is to be humble. So it's quite a paradox that we run into when we try to be humble. How do you try to be humble? Because at the very essence is the I, that is the ego, that is trying to do something. Real humility is something else. Mother once told the story when she was talking with a great saint in India, and she described herself as God was having quite an ego that day. And as she is talking about herself, she was doing it in strong terms. And at last the yogi said, "Mother, we must remember to be humble." Now, he was seeing in Mother what he thought was to be ego. But the truth is that Mother was anything but egotistical. It's just simply how divine consciousness was operating through her on that particular day, for that instance, perhaps, to teach this particular lesson to this highly realized but not yet fully realized being. And so Mother explained that humility was not something that you could just cultivate. It's something that came with the state of realization. Now, I think that every experience that I've had in God has brought with it two qualities, and one is gratitude. A great sense of gratitude for what has been given. And the other is humility. When you really have God experience, it obviously comes from some source deep inside of you that is beyond yourself as you normally think of yourself. And as a result of that, you feel humbled because you know that there's an intelligence, there's a power. There's an upliftment that comes that you couldn't make happen no matter what. I remember when I first started going into experiences, and I had a very doubting, critical kind of mind. And I would wonder, am I making this up? Is this some kind of an experience that I am manufacturing out of my own head? And then I thought about trying to make something like that happen, trying to make myself feel or act or think in the way that I did when God was lifting me up. And truly, there was no way that I could replicate the experience. It just seemed like a very, very pale reflection of anything of the reality I experienced when I felt God. And this helped to prove to my doubting mind, the doubting Thomas inside of me, that this was God that was operating through me. And through experience after experience after experience, each time you touch the divine, it has a purifying effect upon your mind. Now, in the beginning, you're lifted up in divine consciousness, and when you are, you have a complete moment of clarity. But then, because you have not earned the ability to retain that experience, you come back down into human state of consciousness. And there is such a clear demarcation as you experience the contrast between these two. And as your mind becomes more purified, you're able to stay in that higher divine consciousness more consistently, more often. But when you come down, it's a maddening thing. You don't want it to happen in a conscious way. And yet some part of your mind has grabbed on to your ego nature. It's not God who's letting you down. It's your own ego nature that is drawing you down back into the ego self. But by constantly keeping your mind on God, chanting to God, praying to God, talking to God, feeling that presence of God, every time you come into that divine contact through Kriya Yoga and stilling the breath and the mind, you grow in God. Now, you may not always realize it. Again, when you are lifted up in divine consciousness into the stillness, you feel that perhaps nothing great has happened at first, because it is such a natural feeling for you, this expanded awareness, this upliftment. But when you begin to come back down into ego consciousness, you realize what a great contrast there is between that high state of stillness and coming back down into ego consciousness. And so, as your purified mind results in a tremendous desire for God, you cry out for God as you feel yourself descending back down. You don't want to forget God. You don't want to go back into ego consciousness. Papa was so focused upon attaining and keeping that divine consciousness that he didn't want to sleep, fearing that he would forget God for but a moment. Papa tells a humorous story of when he was a wandering sadhu, and he and another sadhu were staying up the night chanting. And Papa noticed, even while he was chanting and feeling the bliss of God, that this other sadhu slipped into a state of sleep, and suddenly his chin was on his chest, and he was sound asleep. And he's just that way for a little while, and suddenly he startled himself into being awake. And the other sadhu started to chastise himself, and he says, "Look at that other sadhu. He's staying awake. He's chanting God's name. He's not going to sleep. You dullard, you idiot, what are you doing? Wake up!" You see what intensity, what purity of purpose is there. What a tremendous keen desire there is for knowing God. Now, you may not feel that you are able to have that kind of intensity, that kind of love for God. And therefore, we must pray for it. We must ask God for it. I remember when I felt that I had no love at all. And I thought, how am I to get it? I don't feel it. And so it suddenly dawned on me that I could pray to God for it. And I started to pray to God that He give me love for Himself. And it struck me as a little bit humorous that I was praying to God that He give me love for Himself. And yet this is the condition that I was in, and this is what helped to open myself to the grace that was flowing to me already, only I wasn't open to it. Somebody asked me recently, how did you develop that love for God? How did you surrender to God? And in a way, you can't really say, because it's such a thing deep down in your soul. You just know it. You feel it when it happens. You can describe it in words, but it is wherever you're at in this moment, wherever you're at in your own spiritual development. You empty yourself as much as you can of everything inside of yourself. You humble yourself before the great divinity residing right within you. You open your heart. You open your mind. You ask God, God, come into this vessel. Come into me. And lift me up into divine consciousness. Give me keen and pure aspiration for you alone. Make me desire you more than any of my desires for this world. Purify me, heart, mind, body, and soul. And lift me up into the divine realms forever and evermore. Pray to God with your heart, with your mind, with your soul, with everything that you have. Do it with an openness to receive. Master wrote the beautiful poem that it's really a story about his own meditation efforts. And while he is meditating, he saw a light burning in the ajna. And he began to run after it, trying to grasp it, trying to get it. And the harder he ran after it, the more the light receded. Finally, he sat down and he started to meditate again. And he entered into the deeper stillness. And there again, the light was there. And there again, he ran after it, trying to embrace it, trying to grasp it. And again, the light disappeared. One more effort, he sat down to become still. He realized his error. And now he quieted the mind and the light began to burn brightly. And the more he stayed quiet and receptive, the brighter the light burned. You see, he realized that it was from his ego nature that he was trying to grasp God in this kind of desperate way. And when you try to grasp God in that way, your fist actually closes. And you're not open and you're not receptive. But when you sit in the quietness and the stillness of your own being, with open hands and open heart and open mind, asking God to come to you, Papa told Mother, said, don't be like the baby monkey hanging on to its mother's neck as the mother jumps from tree to tree and limb to limb. Oftentimes the babies will lose their grasp and they fall a great distance and they become injured. Rather, be like the baby kitten, Mother, and wait and call for the mother, and call and call and call until the mother comes and picks you up by the scruff of your neck and carries you off back to home. Be like that with God. You see the attitude? We cannot desire God in such a way that the ego gets involved, because then we're grasping, we're trying to get something. Rather, we open ourselves to the grace, to the beauty, to the love of God. Open yourself, mind, heart, body, and soul. Become receptive. Master oftentimes emphasized attunement. Attunement with God, attunement with Guru. Attune your mind. Attune your soul. Attune your heart with the God that you realize that is within your Guru. The God that is within you. You know what that quality is. You've had that experience of being uplifted. Mother wrote the beautiful story about kneeling down and touching Master's feet. And when she did, she felt the hem of his robe and the quality of the fabric of his being out of which she wanted to fashion herself. And so, when we feel God's quality, when we feel that purity, that love, that bliss, that light, we recognize it. We know that this is not ourselves in a human ego sense, but it is really our true self, come from God. And that when we immerse ourselves in that again and again and again, we finally become completely purified. Completely purified. And then our mind, our feelings and our actions are in complete attunement with divine will. Mother told the startling story about how she was sitting and asking God what his will was for her. And he responded, whatever your will is my will. You see, the two have merged and become so completely one together that now there is no separation, there is no distance. There is no individual will and divine will. They had merged and become one. Now this is a quality of a great, great soul. And it cannot be used by the human ego to say that whatever it wants to do is all right. It must be God's will if I want to do it. And when you say, I want to do it, you can be pretty well assured that's not God's will. That's not God's will, because that's coming from your human ego. Get out of the ego and become one with God and attune your mind, attune your feelings, and attune your actions, and you will know such freedom, such grace, such bliss that you will never ever look back and regret one step you took. towards this great state of realization. In the Christian tradition, they close with an Amen, which means, so be it, so be it. Amen. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious
presence
in every part of my
being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my being.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Peace. Bliss.